D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek. Well, Derek Mason isn't here yet. He'll be here soon. I'm so used to saying Willie Donick, Derek Mason. Adam Vingan, David James here with you. Derek Mason will be along shortly. We are live at Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators will host the New Jersey Devils tonight. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. The Predators are riding a 5-game winning streak, a season high 5-game winning streak, as they make a push for a playoff spot. They occupy the final playoff spot in the Western Conference as play starts tonight. So, as we await Derek Mason, Willie Donick and I are doing a Predators AUA. Ask us anything. 615-737-1025. We will select at random a caller or a texter, and that person will win a pair of tickets to see the Predators face the Canadiens here at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday night. Make it a good question, though.
Yeah.
Because we will weigh that in determining the winner.
There's a lot of material, because we've had a lot of people that have been on Adam's side saying, hey, you know, why get excited? They're going to be a big underdog. They're in the middle. They should have traded more guys. So you can ask about that. And there have been people that, like me, are enjoying this ride. And so there's a lot to ask about. So let's fire away here.
Tom.
615-737-1025. We want to hear from you. And you could win tickets.
You could. And it's a hot ticket. Saturday night in Smashville against Montreal.
That'll be exciting.
Hockey night in Canada. The Predators will be honoring Ryan Johansson.
It's going to be electric. Ryan Johansson will be in the booth with us in the second period, too. That will be fun.
Have
Joey unleashed.
Have the mute button ready, just in case.
He'll keep it together.
I know he will.
There will be some laughing out loud moments, though. I will promise you.
I think he could have a good career as a broadcaster.
He's a natural.
If he chose to do that.
He said he doesn't want to do it. He was on the podcast with Mr. Max Hurst, Kara Hammer, Brooks Batten, and he said he did not want to do that.
Well,
I think maybe he would be a podcaster. He's a natural, though.
Yes.
He's a communicator.
I think he would be good at it. So you have a lot to look forward to if you win those tickets. 615-737-1025. Tom says, Chicago played its first-round pick this week. Is Brady Martin eligible to play, and how would that change the Predators' potential playoff run? Well, first of all, Brady Martin has played games for the Predators this season. He started the season with the team, appeared in, what, three games, Willie, before returning to his junior team. I don't know if his junior season is over.
I don't believe it is.
But once it is, he can come back.
He can.
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't heard a lot of scuttlebutt on that in terms of whether they think he would be good enough to jump in and help. Frondell did play a good first game, but this is the beauty of when you're with the Blackhawks and you're not going to make it. They have nothing to lose. They're not playing for anything. So they can just throw him in there. Much like the Predators, they traded for Philip Forsberg. He flew over from Sweden like Frondell and jumped right in at age 18. They had nothing to lose. So it's a little bit of a different situation. But there have been guys that have done it before. Guys, young, talented players who jump on board and make a contribution. Injuries could happen. They're not super deep at center. But I think that would be a little rich for Brady Martin, unless he's made a big, big jump since the beginning of the season. But his big picture is very good. There's a lot of talk about the rule changes. We can ask Elliot if there's been any further confirmation, but there's a speculation that a 19-year-old like Brady Martin would be eligible to play for Milwaukee next year, which would be, I think, speed up the development process.
Remember, Brady Martin started the season with the Predators, played only home games, if I am not mistaken. The team went on a week-long road trip early in the season. He didn't play in any of those games. The Predators were sheltering him, protecting him, perhaps, because it is much harder, of course, on the road when you don't dictate the matchup. So even if Brady Martin were to rejoin the Predators after his junior season is over, I can't imagine a scenario where he is getting into playoff games barring multiple injuries. He could still be with the team, practice with the team, travel with the team, But I can't imagine a scenario where Brady Martin is getting into playoff games this season. Let's go to our phone line. Welcome in Justin. Justin, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm new to all this NHL stuff, so I'm calling to ask you guys, what made you fall in love with the NHL, if not Preds hockey?
Well, thank you for the call, Justin. That's a good question. If I may share my story first, Willie Donick.
Do it.
I grew up in the Hampton Roads region of Virginia, Norfolk, Virginia Beach, that region of Virginia. And we did not have major league professional sports. We had, and still do have, a AAA baseball team, the Norfolk Tides, and at the time, an ECHL hockey team, the Hampton Roads Admirals. And my dad would take me to baseball games in the summer, and I like baseball. It's not my favorite sport. Sorry, guys. It's not my favorite sport, but hockey just grabbed me. The speed of the game, the physicality, I was hooked. And my dad would take me to hockey games every Friday or Saturday night that the Admirals were in town at the Norfolk Scope. So my love of hockey started there. The Admirals NHL affiliate was the Washington Capitals, which Washington to Virginia Beach, about a 3.5-4 hour drive. So my dad would drive up with me to DC, take me to some games. And yeah, it all started when I was young, going to minor league hockey games. And when I moved to Washington for college in 2007, any chance I got to go to Capitals games, I went to Capitals games, and it led to a career in journalism and covering hockey, and that's how I landed here. So if not for my love of hockey, Justin, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair right now.
For me, I spent my childhood up until age 12 in New York, and that happened to be right when the Miracle on Ice happened and the New York Islanders won 4 straight Stanley Cups. So that was my connection to hockey. I never played. And then I moved to Florida for my high school years and completely lost touch because this was pre-Lightning and Panthers. So the only time I watched was playoffs on ESPN, things like that. I kept an eye on it. But then when the Predators came to town, that foundation I had came in handy. Also, as a minor league baseball player for the Blue Jays, playing Sega Genesis NHL 94, I knew the main guys and what they could do. It's crazy to that sounds. I knew just enough maybe to get by early with a fan base that was trying to learn. Then I just hitched my wagon to Pete Weber and Terry Crisp. And I said, I'm just going to be a sponge. I'm going to learn everything I can from these guys.
Let's go to Jay on our phone line. Jay, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. So I got like a couple of parts of my question. First, even though the team will be most likely, under the gun, right? I mean, they won't be the favorites going into any playoff game. From a pure business standpoint, aren't having at least 2, maybe 3 more games here in Bridgestone for the income standpoint important to the team and for free agency down the line to show that, hey, this team is a playoff contender, they can get there? Does that not make a good selling point for the free agents coming in or potential free agents? And I'll just hang up and let you guys talk about that.
Thank you, Jay. Well, of course, playoff games are great for revenue. The Predators certainly want that. And free agents are certainly attracted to teams that are consistently in the playoffs. Steven Stamkos, for example, wouldn't have signed here in 2024 if he didn't think that the Predators could compete in the playoffs. So it's certainly a good thing. It certainly doesn't hurt if the team makes the playoffs from a business and potential free agency standpoint.
Oh, no question at all. I think they want to remain a destination city, and I think they definitely have that. People want to play in Nashville. But if you do tear it down and you're not good for a while, I think you probably lose that. Isn't that fair to say? I think you lose some of that. Now, I think what will be something to watch, Adam, is how many really good free agents hit the market in the next couple of years. Because the cap has gone way up, so there's not as many teams that are right up against it that just have no budget at all. So that is allowing them to keep potential free agents off the free market. So I'm not sure it's going to be an easy thing to cash in on free agent-wise, but the Predators definitely have plenty of cap space in the coming years because they're going to be out from under the Matt Duchene buyout, the bulk of it anyway, when they hit the new year this summer. And so they'll have some good budget to work with. And so I think the contracts that may have seemed like they were a little big the last couple of years, like Stamkos for $8 million, I think with the rising cap, those are actually bargain contracts. Those are, or at least right in line with what they should be.
Caleb in Gallatin says, when Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea arrived, everyone was expecting at least a conference final appearance, but those expectations quickly changed. The way everyone is performing now, is this the team you would have expected to see from the get-go? And also, is this what we should expect from here on out, or do you think they just caught fire and we should still manage our expectations? That from Caleb in Gallatin. So, some interesting points there, Caleb. I remember the day after the spending spree of 2024, I said my expectation for that team, which meaning last season's team, was you got to win two rounds of the playoffs.
And what did Coach Willie say?
That I was nuts.
Yep.
And we weren't even...
Just to expect it. To expect it.
Even teammates yet.
Now, did I think that they had the ability to do that? I absolutely did, based on the season they had had before and adding the players they did. I was all in on that. But to say you expect to win, it just doesn't work that way in the playoffs. But that aside, right, they look like they had it at that point. It seems crazy to think back on those days.
Yes. To answer Caleb's question about, is this what we should expect from here on out, or do you think they just caught fire and we should still manage our expectations? I do think, Caleb and listeners, that you should manage your expectations because we've talked about this. We've talked about this a lot. I vented yesterday about this. When you look under the hood of why the Predators are playing the way they have been playing for the past 3 weeks, there are a couple of things that stand out. One, goaltending. Saros and Onanen have been outstanding. Combined, the Predators have saved more goals than expected than any team in the league over the past 3 weeks, which speaks to how well the goaltenders are playing. The defense, the team defense around the goaltenders has not been good. The goaltenders have had to cover up a lot of mistakes. So your concern would be Saros and Onanen come back down to earth. The defense does not improve, and then the bottom drops out. Offensively, look, when you're hot, you're hot. The Predators scored 5 goals on 7 shots to open the game the other night. That rarely happens. It's not going to continue to happen. But Steven Stamkos has been scoring at a really solid clip for 3-4 months now. Philip Forsberg is playing excellently. Matthew Wood at center has worked out so far. So offensively, there are things to be encouraged by.
The power play consistency, yes, I think, is another one that has been it's been consistent long enough that you feel like it's a legit weapon. I mean, I think that it's not a fluke that they're in the top 10, I think, in power play. So they do have some things going for them, but I agree that it's a team that has flaws. It's a team that has worked very hard to overcome the flaws and be the best version of themselves when they were, the opposite for a year and a third, basically. So I commend them, and I think they do have a lot going for them with the intangibles right now. I think they have a very strong locker room leadership group that knows how to win and knows how to find ways to win. And so if you have really good goaltending and you have that, I think you have something that you're bringing to the table. But they've got to keep it going for 11 games because they are by no means home free at all. This thing's going to have some twists and turns before the end of it.
One texter says, when's the new GM coming in? and the priorities wanting to make the playoffs and get better and younger for the future, is it more of a detriment not playing more young guys than not? Well, as Willie has pointed out, the Predators have played a lot of young guys lately. I mentioned this as we discussed the Predators and Sharks on Tuesday. You would think that the Sharks would have a much younger roster than the Predators because the Sharks' top players are all 19, 20, 21, 22. The Predators and the Sharks, their average ages are basically the same. The Sharks are a teeny tiny bit younger. So the Predators, although they're top players, their offensive drivers are older players in their early to mid, in some cases, upper 30s. Between Luke Evangelista, Matt Wood, Ryan Efko, Fedor Svechkov, Zachary LaRue, there are
Reed Schaefer, Kemmel, right. Weisblatt. They will dress 7 to 8 players each game that are 24 and under. So they have, since the trade deadline, and people may not have seen that if you're just kind of honing in on it now, they are playing really all of the prospects with few exceptions that are in the range that are ready to play in the NHL right now. So they haven't blocked any of their top prospects. So I think that's the thing that I hope people feel good about if you're going to watch. I would feel a little bit uneasy about the position I've taken, which is, hey, enjoy the ride. See if you can see it through. Going from last to playoffs when you were last place as late as December 6th would be a great story, regardless of the circumstances. But I would feel a little less excited about it if you get there and you had traded future assets or you had kept everybody. Would you agree, Adam? I think what they did to move on from 4 veterans and bring in 4 young guys balances the books a little bit for those that are like, hey, we got to get younger, right? We've got to look at the future. This is the serving two masters.
And admittedly, I pounced on that comment when Barry Trotz made it. You were not on the show that day.
Yeah.
You were traveling. And it will be interesting to see how people, including myself, react if the Predators make the playoffs regarding what Barry Trotz did. Because at the moment, on deadline day, I was disappointed about how the Predators approached the deadline. If the Predators make the playoffs after the moves Barry Trotz made, shipping players out, bringing young players in, already on the team, of course, some of us may have to eat some crow. But one texter says, and this is how we will end it. One texter says, Adam struggles to praise the team as it takes away from his tear it down stance. You choose your words carefully to not give them the credit they deserve. They have played well lately, lots of work to do, but embrace the good play.
Well, I think it's been notable, right, that I thought when they traded those 4 guys, they weakened their roster. I think there was a concern internally that, oh, wow, can you still compete? Taking away these 4 guys who have played critical roles. So it's a credit to the young guys that they've been able to come in and give them that youthful energy to where they have not dropped off.
All I would say to that texture is go back and listen to the start of the 5 o'clock hour yesterday regarding choosing my words carefully
right.
to not give them the credit they deserve. I don't think I'm doing that at all. I think you're reaching. 615-737-1025.
So you want to say on the record again, you're enjoying the story. We've gotten you on board. You're enjoying the ride.
You have
loosened your grip on, they've got to tear it down. They've got to get worse before they can get better, which was your mantra for months.
Well, it's been my mantra for years, actually.
Really. For years, actually. You're right.
I am enjoying the story. I think I can enjoy the story while also having concerns about the future. I think you are allowed to do both. I don't think you have to be all in one bucket or the other. I think I can enjoy the story. As I've mentioned multiple times, I love playoff hockey. I will be here for the playoff games. I will cover the playoff games. I can enjoy the ride while also being skeptical about what's to come. I don't think you have to choose one or the other. I think it's okay to be in two boxes. 615-737-1025. We will determine a winner. We will determine a winner coming up next. There's also a report about a coach in town that's worth mentioning, and we will do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. Thanks to everyone who participated in our Predators Ask Us Anything. We love talking hockey. We're glad we're able to do it. If you did not win the tickets, I believe we have one more pair to give away tomorrow. So be listening for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Predators take on the Canadiens on Saturday during our program tomorrow. Willie, David James brought this to my attention from John Rothstein of CBS Sports. Sources, colon, Vanderbilt is endeavoring to sign Mark Byington to a long-term contract extension after back-to-back trips to the NCAA tournament. Nothing has been signed yet, but the Commodores administration began working well prior to the coaching carousel to lock up Byington. And as fate would have it, Candace Story Lee, Vanderbilt AD, is expected to join us in roughly 1 hour. So we can ask her about this. But the report from John Rothstein of CBS Sports, Vanderbilt is endeavoring to sign Mark Byington to a long-term contract extension.
This really shouldn't surprise anybody. As I said yesterday, it's a different outlook in college sports, and it's certainly a different outlook at Vanderbilt. There was a time when the immediate answer might have been, oh, boy, is Vanderbilt going to commit it? I was in school. My coach, National Coach of the Year, SEC Champions, 1993, one of the lower-paid coaches in the SEC, was hoping to get a raise. Got courted by a lot of teams, including South Carolina. Went to South Carolina and interviewed, waiting for the phone to ring. Vanderbilt, he wanted to stay. Vanderbilt, crickets. So he left. I mean, it's happened, but that's the old Vanderbilt. This is different. I feel like, too, the expectations that a coach at Vanderbilt University, regardless of sport, can have are way different than they used to be. It used to be, can you win a national title at Vanderbilt? I don't know. Now it's like, hey, baseball's done it. Tennis has done it. Football closer. Why not? Why couldn't you? Just especially the way the landscape has changed with NIL.
The coaching carousel is starting to spin in college basketball. The huge news earlier this week, North Carolina firing Hubert Davis. And we mentioned Mark Byington's name came up in a story on The Athletic about potential candidates to replace Hubert Davis. The news today, Will Wade bailing on NC State after just one season to go back to LSU. So a lot of high-profile jobs opening in college basketball, and with the work that Mark Byington has done at Vanderbilt, and keep in mind the work he was doing before arriving at Vanderbilt to get the Vanderbilt job. He turned JMU into one of the best mid-major basketball programs in the country. That's how he got the Vanderbilt job. So after two seasons at Vanderbilt, a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament, we all argued it probably should have been higher, a heartbreaking loss last weekend to Nebraska. But Byington has done a tremendous job turning around the Vanderbilt basketball program. So, as you said, Willie, it does not shock me in the slightest that reportedly Vanderbilt is trying to sign Byington to a long-term contract extension. Candace Story Lee, Vandy AD, will join us at 5:30. So I'm sure this will come up. We've got other questions for Candace Story Lee as well. The women's basketball team still alive in the NCAA women's basketball tournament. They play tomorrow afternoon against Notre Dame. Football had a fabulous season. Diego Pavia was a Heisman Trophy finalist, of course. So a lot to get into with Candace Story Lee. That interview coming up in just 1 hour. Let's keep it on college basketball. The Sweet 16 starts tonight. 4 games, starting with Texas versus Purdue in the West region, followed by Arkansas versus Arizona, the other West region matchup. In the South region, Iowa, fresh off an upset of defending national champion Florida, faces Nebraska. which defeated Vanderbilt last weekend. And then the main event, Illinois versus Houston in Houston at the Toyota Center, I believe is the name of the arena. Yes, in Houston where the Rockets play.
Yes.
So
I have seen the Rockets play there.
So a home court advantage for the Cougars. And because the Cougars are not the hosts of this region, they can play there. I believe that's the rule, correct?
I don't know. It's not their home court.
You don't seem to like this. I get the vibe you don't like that.
Well, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. You know, I think a number one seed being rewarded to play in an atmosphere where you're going to take over the building, that is earned a little bit more than a two seed. But, look, this is – it's happened before. It's not the first time it's happened. So, and I do think Illinois has a big enough fan base that they will be represented. They will have a decent amount of people. And remember, in this particular game, there's a doubleheader. So the other two teams will have some people there too. May not be as pronounced as it would be in the regional final.
So apparently Rice University, which is also in Houston, if I'm not mistaken.
It is.
Came to the rescue and decided to host the South region. So Rice is hosting the South region so that Houston
can play there. What
does that
exactly mean? Yeah.
NCAA.
You are the host.
I'm not really sure exactly what that means. I don't know what that entails, but NCAA rules do not allow schools to play in venues where they are the host institution. So Houston is not the host institution for the South region and therefore can play down the road. So it will be interesting to see what the fan contingent is like. We talked so much last week about Nebraska and all of the fans they brought to Oklahoma City for those two games. I have to imagine the crowd will be heavily in Houston's favor tonight. But four fantastic games. I would say the marquee matchups in the Sweet 16 are tomorrow. The East region is absolutely stacked. St. John's versus Duke, Michigan State versus UConn, and in the Midwest region, Alabama versus Michigan, Tennessee versus Iowa State. I don't know if Joshua Jefferson, one of Iowa State's top players who missed the game against Kentucky because of an ankle injury, I don't know if he's going to play tomorrow against Tennessee, but it would be something, Willie, if this Tennessee team, and we've mentioned this before, this Tennessee team overall may be the least talented Tennessee team in recent memory for Rick Barnes, but it would be something if this Tennessee team is the team that goes far in the tournament.
It's funny how that works sometimes. I think, you know, if you look at any program in any sport that's good every year, you probably say to yourself, this team was better than X team was better than Y team, but Y went further. It just happens. Like, I think Vanderbilt's baseball team, for example, first won the national title in 2014. I think player for player, they were better in 2013, but lost in the Super Regional. I think that can happen. I don't think Tennessee's as stacked as they have been the last couple years with all that they've lost and turned over, but who knows? This could be the year. They're a 3.5-point underdog, which tells me that I have to believe that Iowa State is still what's his name? Josh, the guy that got injured.
Josh Jefferson.
Josh Jefferson. Not having him, I think, has got to be a factor a little bit here, or him maybe not 100%. But I think Tennessee, what have I said all year about them? Their defense and their rebounding is going to keep them in every game. They will be in the game. It's just a matter of, can they find a way? And Iowa State has elite defense. If you look at their metrics, they're really, really good. Their defense is even better than their offense. So we got to see how Jefferson looks, but I think Tennessee will have a really good chance. This will be a grinding game, I think.
Eli says Rice hosting means its sports athletic staff is working, or individuals associated with the sports athletic staff are working the stadium. Okay?
Okay.
I learned something today. Thank you, Eli. I've never known what that means. I believe the SoCon Conference, for example, hosted the Greenville Regional in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool, I guess. But Houston gets a home game out of it, so thanks to Rice. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to the NCAA tournament. We hear Derek Mason is on his way. We cannot wait to see him because I do have a couple of questions for Derek Mason when he arrives. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home with a $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025, The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingen here with you. Taking bets on when Derek Mason shows up. He's on his way. He had an important doctor's appointment today, hence why he hasn't been on the show, but he's on his way. Will he make it before the end of this segment?
You have to find out. I feel like when he gets here, you're just going to pepper him with questions. So you're very excited about Derek coming in.
I love Derek.
Is he going to be ready for this? Like,
he needs to be ready.
You're not going to let him ease into the show.
No, there is no easing into the show. I did want to ask him about this. I saw this earlier, and it made me laugh. Indiana's Kurt Cignetti rips transfer Nick Marsh for gold cleats on ESPN.com. Cignetti, who guided Indiana to a 16-0 record last fall, was asked about decorated incoming transfer Nick Marsh, a starting wide receiver the past two seasons at Michigan State and among the notable transfers Indiana added in January. The coach noted Marsh's production at MSU before pivoting to the junior's choice of footwear. Quote, "I didn't love those gold shoes he came out in today. He learned what getting your ass ripped is all about. I don't know if that happened to him very often at Michigan State. That was before practice started." End quote.
Setting the tone.
I want to know how Derek Mason feels about Kurt Cignetti ripping one of his beloved Spartans for wearing gold shoes.
I don't feel like Derek Mason was a gold shoe guy. I don't think he was flashy with the footwear. So I don't know. Maybe he'll side with Cignetti. He's gonna have the Michigan State. He will defend the Michigan State Spartan green forever.
Yes. We'll have to ask him that when he shows up. One texter about the Predator says, if the NHL went to three-point games instead of this insane system where some are worth two and some worth one, the Preds would be safely in the playoffs and the East wouldn't look so much better than the West. Or like the other major sports, just have wins and losses and don't reward going to overtime. Why hasn't this been done? The conversation about the point format in the NHL has been ongoing. A lot of people prefer the idea of
3-2-1.
Yes, 3 points for a regulation win, 2 points for an overtime or shootout win, 1 point for an overtime or shootout loss, 0 points for a regulation loss. But the NHL likes the format the way it is. Gary Bettman also talks about how he loves the playoff format. I don't think a lot of people love the playoff format because oftentimes one team that should be heavily favored in a series is the underdog in a series. I mean, think about the projected first-round matchup between the Dallas Stars and the Minnesota Wild in the Central Division. The Dallas Stars are the second-best team in the NHL. The Minnesota Wild are the sixth best team in the NHL. And one of those two teams won't make it out of the first round.
I have to believe if you voted, if you had a fan vote and threw the players in there, threw the coaches in there, put all hockey people, you know, in the NHL and all of the fans, I would think it would be a landslide to do the 1-8 the way that the format used to be. Would you agree?
Yes.
And it was like, what, 2012 or something that they switched
to this? The wild card format came to be in the 2013-14 season.
13-14, okay.
Yes.
I feel like that is one that everybody agrees on. Not everybody. Gary Bettman clearly has a big vote, and he is steadfastly wanting to keep it the way it is. But how do you stand on the other one, the 3-2-1? Like, I do think it's a little confusing for a casual fan to see these points and say, what's going on? Why, you know, it's a little easier to follow this way, where it's just 2-1, But it does change the math some. It doesn't change it as much as you might think. I feel like people have studied this year after year. It's not like it's a drastic change, but it would maybe be a better way to separate teams that are super close and reward teams that win more games in regulation.
Well, let me tell you this. The Nashville Predators have 25 regulation wins this season. And regulation wins are a big tiebreaker. The Predators,
it's the number one tiebreaker, right?
I believe that is true. The Predators have 25 regulation wins. They have as many regulation wins as the Minnesota Wild, who have 15 more points than the Predators in the standings.
And, you know, the LA Kings, who are the team closest to the Predators in the fight for the wild card.
18 regulation wins this season.
18 regulation wins and 18 overtime losses. That's a lot of loss. And it's not like they haven't won any games in overtime, but they just go to overtime a lot. So there has been a reward year after year for, and this is much more likely to happen in low-scoring games, right? A low-scoring game is more likely to go to overtime. And so low-scoring teams are rewarded by getting to overtime. And then what you do from there can vary, you know, within a year drastically, right? But some teams are better than others. Like the Sharks are 12-6 in overtime. That's one of the better records in overtime. And when you look at their skill, the space on the ice in a 3-on-3, they're probably built for overtime better than some teams. If Predators are, for the record, 9-9. They're straight 500 in games that have gone to overtime.
If you were to reformat the playoff format to 1-8 in each conference, here would be the playoff matchups as of today. Colorado versus Nashville. That wouldn't change. Dallas versus Vegas, Minnesota versus Edmonton, Anaheim versus Utah. Those would be your 1-8-2-7-3-6-4-5 matchups in the Western Conference. So some change there, because at the moment, the projected playoff matchups in the Western Conference, Colorado-Nashville, Dallas-Minnesota, Edmonton-Vegas, Anaheim-Utah. So really not too much of a difference.
Just the Dallas-Minnesota, which is, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's locked in, but it's about as close as you can be to locked in, right?
The Stars are 7 points back of the Avalanche, having played one more game.
Yeah, for a while it looked like they were making a run at them. I don't, but Colorado has bounced back and won the last few. It looks like they're going to hold them off. Dallas, Minnesota, holy cow, that's going to be a series.
Absolutely.
Did anybody see Michael McCarron just pummel Corey Perry the other day? Good grief.
I'm sure a lot of Predators fans appreciated that.
Sure. I mean, Corey Perry is the classic villain. But, man.
Corey Perry may be the villain in Predators history. If you were putting together a list of the biggest villains in Predators history, I think Corey Perry would be number one.
Not number one, he's top two, top three. Patrick Kane would be a contender.
Patrick Kane.
Ryan Suter.
Yeah. Corey Perry.
I'm hoping the Ryan Suter will fall down the rankings over time. You know, time heals wounds. I hope someday Ryan Suter can come back to Nashville.
Ryan Kessler,
no question.
Ryan Kessler would be a big one on that list as well. One texter says, did you guys hear Max Herz's idea about reformatting the NHL to drop conferences and just rank every team 1 through 16 for playoffs? I did not hear that idea, Max.
They actually did that back in the early 80s, I think. Which is why the Islanders could play the Flyers in the Stanley Cup Final. And Montreal played the Rangers. They used to do that, 1-16, regardless of conference.
By that logic, the Predators would miss the playoffs because the Predators are 20th.
Yeah, that would
in
not
the
be
NHL.
Good. Yeah.
It is interesting to see which teams would make it based on this format. It would basically be all teams in the Eastern Conference. How many Western Conference teams were in the top 16? Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota,
Anaheim,
and Utah.
Only five?
Utah, Anaheim, Minnesota, Dallas, Colorado. Wow. Only five of the top 16 teams in the NHL are in the Western Conference.
And four of the five are in the Central.
That is also true, which just goes to show you how tough the Central Division is. Justin says, don't forget Alexander Burrows as a Predators villain.
Oh, yes. Going back a ways. Good call.
Yes. Gator Tim says Jimmy VC. Jimmy VC.
always
on the list.
Forever on
There's
the list.
Derek Mason.
Derek Mason in the house.
There he is. He made
He's
it.
Ready to go.
He made it. Your mic is on. I set it up for you. I've got lots of questions.
Steve Mace, you should feel good about yourself because Adam has been so excited. When is Derek going to get here?
I'm like
Derek Mason's on his way. On his way.
I'm like a dog.
He's coming.
I'm like a dog staring out my window. Willie knows I would feel the same way about him if you were here and he wasn't.
I know how Willie feels.
Yes. I'm like a dog staring out the window waiting for my owner to come home. But Derek Mason is here. Hi, Derek. How are you?
What's going on, man? It's been a long day, but a good day. You know, I had a doctor's appointment, and I don't mind sharing it. I mean, you know, when you've played a physical sport for a long time, you may get some ailments here and there, and I was having or still is having some issues with my back, but it's minor after talking with the doctor.
Okay,
just gonna do some rehab and take it there first for a good bit, and then if it continues, which he doesn't believe it will, but if it does, then we'll take other measures. But right now I'm just gonna do some rehab. Strengthen up the core. Gotta
Pilates.
Up the core. Pilates all. I gotta do it all,
yoga.
Man.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good. That's good. We're glad you're in good health.
Yes.
You missed a lot today.
I'm sure I have.
But we'll catch
you
up. We'll catch you up. We've talked a lot of Predators. A lot of people are interested in the local professional hockey team.
Did I miss Shea? Did I miss
Candace Storyley? No, she's coming up
at
5:30.
Okay, cool.
We made sure that you would be here in time for Vanderbilt Athletic Director Candace Storyley. I almost called her Candy. I don't know her that well. Candace Storyley. She will. Her friends may call her Candy.
Exactly.
But
we haven't reached that yet.
That's too informal for me. Candace Storyley. Will join us at 5:30. Elliot Freeman will join us at the top of the hour. I did want to get your thoughts on one thing.
Yes.
I mentioned to Willie before you came in. I want to know how you feel about Kurt Cignetti ripping a Michigan State transfer on Indiana for wearing gold cleats before practice.
He was ripping a...
Have you seen this?
No, a former...
So,
a former
Indiana...
Spartan.
Indiana... has a former Spartans wide receiver named Nick Marsh.
Yes, I remember. Nick Marsh is a hell of a receiver. Yes.
Nick Marsh apparently attempted to wear gold cleats to practice.
Okay.
And Cignetti said, quote, "I didn't love those gold shoes he came out in today. He learned what getting your ass ripped is all about. I don't know if that happened to him very often at Michigan State." That was before practice started.
How did the story get out there?
Cignetti mentioned it.
See, this is – I don't know. I don't
he
know
brought
how
it up.
I feel. If you should have explained all of this when he transferred to your school, you should have explained these are, you know, the things that we do and these are the things that we don't do. We wear a certain color cleat, whether it's black or white. We don't sort of go off the color spectrum in regards to our colors. So if you want to wear red and white or white or even possibly black, yes. But outside of that color, you know, we don't allow. That's not who we are. And if he didn't explain it to her, I don't know why in the hell he's ripping them. Like, is that a badge of honor for Cignetti? That, you know, it's sort of in the mode of Nick Saban back in the day when Nick was young. But the thing is, Cignetti's not young. You know, I hope he doesn't get to a point where because he's won a championship, because people see him a certain way, now he has to continue. He has to sort of push in even more to this persona that he has. My thing is, listen, I understand these young men and women are getting paid now. But I've always said there's a way you do things. And if no one asks that specific question or Marsh didn't bring it up, why then would you bring it up? Now, if you talk with Marsh about it and he didn't care about you talking, oh, then cool. But I'm just not that type of guy that's going to, especially if a guy's just coming to my program and he doesn't quite know the ins and the outs of the program. I'm going to allow it to happen one time and then let you know that one time. I'm not going to rip you. It's just going to, hey, that's not what we do. You know, you might have done that at Michigan State, and that's great. But here at Indiana, this is what we do. And I'm sure Nick Marsh would have been like, okay. Now, if he does it after that, then you have your opportunity to rip him a new one. But I just don't understand this, you know, just because you don't like you see it for the first time, now all of a sudden now you want to rip somebody. Just pull them to the side. Or one of the upperclassmen should have said something in the locker room.
Yeah. Hey, before you go out here, just
exactly.
know.
Coach is going to get
coach
is,
hey, coach is going like to be on it. You.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the part I don't get. It's just like.
Somebody look out for the guy.
Exactly. Somebody in the locker room.
Assistant coach.
Bro.
Equipment guy. Somebody.
Coach, somebody that recruited you.
Yeah.
Like, hey, bro, you may want to go back in because Coach Sig don't like that. And then, but nobody want. It seemed like
now,
nobody
if they did
wanted,
that, and he said, "I'm all right." It, then you're like, okay, go ahead,
nah,
watch what happens.
Proceed at your own risk.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you don't, you know, you just don't rip a guy and make it public if you haven't laid down all of the guidelines. That's my thing.
615-737-1025. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, will join us coming up next. The Predators host the New Jersey Devils tonight at 7 o'clock. Elliot, coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.